And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, we're down to the final four in the NBA postseason. And there's a lot on the line. Plus, who are the best players left in the NBA playoffs? We'll talk parity in college football. Has it ever really existed? What's the best and worst coaching job in college football? We'll answer some of the important questions on quarterbacks. I'll give you a Tuesday top 10 as we always do. Plus, I may already be out on the idea of Sean Payton being the next coach of the Panthers, and I'll explain why. We'll talk some aliens and a whole lot more over the next few hours. Plus, Cedric Maxwell scheduled to join us later on to talk about the NBA postseason as somebody who won a couple of championships and was also the Finals MVP. He's scheduled to join us later this hour. Plenty to do over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. Or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you until 3 on this Tuesday, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing phenomenal. A little bit of an off night last night, not too much going on. Got to bed at a good time. It was very nice, but I'm refreshed, ready to go. Heat game 1 tonight in Miami, South Beach. Are you kidding me? It's going to be rocking, Luke. Incredibly excited to be here. Beautiful day in the Lowcountry on this Tuesday.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, big night for your Miami Heat. It's true. Last night, like, I was watching the baseball. I was watching my Boston Red Sox. They were in a rain delay, so that game ended up going until like almost midnight or whatever. But then I was sitting around, and I was thinking, like, okay, now what do I do? I went to bed early last night. Well, early for me. It was still like, you know, 1 a.m. or something. But I thought, I might as well go to bed. I don't know what else to do. I didn't have any TV shows to binge. It was a weird feeling. Looking forward to having the NBA playoffs return tonight and the draft lottery and everything else that we'll get into over the next couple of hours. Let me start with this, with the NBA playoffs. Whether it's the NBA or all sports, right, this is what it's about, trying to crown a champion. It's always interesting that we boil it down to just a couple of games out of the year. Major League Baseball, you play 162 games, but it comes down to who's left standing. Right, in the NFL, it's all about who wins the Super Bowl. NBA, same idea. In fact, we'll look back, right, and think like, wow, the Bucks. We provide no context. The Bucks lost to the Celtics. What a disappointment for Giannis. We'll look back years from now and think, wow, they blew a 3-2 lead. They didn't follow up. They won a championship the next year. They couldn't even get to the conference finals. We just care about the wins and the losses. Celtics beat the Bucks. They move on. That's all that matters. We provide no context. We don't look at the great series or postseason or year that Giannis had or the fact that they were champions the year prior. It just comes down to winning championships. And championships are such an important part of the conversations around these athletes. When it comes to the NBA, right, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Charles Barkley, these are guys that are kind of forgotten because they never won a championship. When you talk about the greatest players, you don't really mention them. Barkley has become a little bit of a caricature because of his own personality on TV, and therefore I think people forget how talented he really was, especially for his size. Karl Malone, right, is one of the all-time greatest scorers. You never hear his name mentioned when you talk about top players of all time. John Stockton is forgotten. We talk about Chris Paul as the point god. And granted, Chris Paul hasn't won any championships either. Right, but you don't really hear John Stockton's name brought up too often when you talk about the great point guards. In the NFL, even if you have one Super Bowl, right, we hold it against Aaron Rodgers, only has one. Drew Brees only has one. Peyton Manning for the longest time. Finally got that second one. But it all comes down to the championships. It doesn't matter how good of a career you've had. It's about winning those rings. And that's what's on the line now, is we're down to the final four teams. And the first one is most important when it comes to championships. The first one is more important than getting a second or a third or a fourth, certainly in the NBA. In the NFL, because of Tom Brady and what he's accomplished, and some other quarterbacks like a Troy Aikman, a Terry Bradshaw, right? For Aaron Rodgers, it's still important he gets his second. For Drew Brees, it was always important he would try to get his second. Russell Wilson could use a second Super Bowl ring just to try to keep up with some of the other greats. But in the NBA, usually, you just need to get that first one. You need a ring. James Harden, Chris Paul, we hold it against Barkley. As I said, Malone, Stockton. Would have been a big difference if they got just one ring. It's almost like having kids, right? The first one is a big deal. You don't know what you're doing, and you're their first-time parent, and it's a big thrill. And then you have the second kid, and it's a big day too, of course. But maybe you're not as scared because you've been through it before. The first time you went through it, it was new. It was exciting. It was challenging. You really know what you were doing. You weren't prepared to be a parent. Then you got through it with the first kid. You feel more comfortable, prepare, ready to go for the second kid. Plus, you know, the second time you go through something, maybe it's not as special. You could tell, I've never had kids before. The first kid, big deal. Second kid, yeah, sure, still a big deal. Not quite as important as the first child you have in terms of just going through that, having a kid, becoming a parent for the first time, right? Becoming a champion for the first time. Then you can add on to that. Sure, you get a second ring. That's nice. Not as important as when you become a champion. There's a bigger difference between not being a champion and being a champion compared to being a champion and being a multi-champion. And so that's what's on the line this postseason. When you look at the guys that are competing for a championship, for Jason Tatum and the Celtics, I mean, this would be their first championship. Big deal, especially for a Tatum that's under 25 years old. That whole team's pretty young. Coach is in his first year. And when it comes to Dallas, Luka Doncic, his first championship. And again, doing it at just 23. Jason Kidd, getting his first championship as a head coach would be a big deal. Jimmy Butler, a little bit different, 32 years old. It'd be his first championship. It'd be a long time coming. That'd be a big deal. That'd be a real change in legacy. And when it comes to Golden State, they certainly have plenty of championships, but it'd be the first one since Durant left, and it'd be Steph Curry doing it on his own once again. And in this case, that's also kind of important as well. Now, here was Stephen A. Smith this morning. Stephen A. was talking about Jimmy Butler and this series with the Heat and the Celtics, and how Butler, unlike his counterparts, like a Jason Tatum, like a Luka Doncic, Butler's more like a Chris Paul, kind of running out of time and needing to get it done. Here was Stephen A. this morning on First Take.
Jimmy Butler, 32. Jason Tatum's about 8 years younger. And so when I look at Jason Tatum, you already been to like 3 or 4 conference finals, and you're 24 years old. You got time on your side, time running out on Jimmy Butler. You don't get this many opportunities. You got to the finals, you showed you could lead your team, and you balled out in the NBA finals, so he deserves a lot of credit for that. He doesn't shrink beneath the moment. The lights get brighter, Jimmy Butler gets brighter. Okay, we know that about him. But in the same breath, you also got to look at that dust on that birth certificate. You ain't getting younger, you're getting older. And the opportunities that are going to be there for you may be sparse, to say the least. And so I'm looking at it from the standpoint that Jason Tatum ain't got nothing but time on his side. Not only are you young, you got another young stud with you in Jaylen Brown and a young coach. Not to say that Jimmy Butler doesn't have that in Eric Spoelstra, but the point that I'm making is the opportunities are not going to be there as aplenty for Jimmy Butler as they are for Jason Tatum.
Yeah, Chris Paul's running out of time, may be out of time. Jimmy Butler certainly has less time than a Luka Doncic, Jason Tatum, some of the younger stars, even a Giannis who already has a championship, is looking for another. And it's important that you get it done, right? You need that first ring. It makes a huge difference. It's a bigger difference. It's a bigger step forward than the second or the third or the fourth or so on and so forth until you pass the leader and become the greatest champion of all time. That'd be the only other biggest step forward when it comes to one single championship. But when you look at these final four teams, what's on the line when you look at legacy? And let's start in descending order. The team that's the longest or the largest long shot to win the championship, that'd be the Dallas Mavericks. What would change if the Mavericks won a championship? Of course, it would be all about Luka Doncic. to, at 23 years old, be able to beat the Suns and embarrass them as you did in Game 7 on their floor, and then to go off and, in this hypothetical, beat the Warriors and probably have to do it on their home floor as well, and then to go to the NBA Finals and either have to beat the number one seed in the East or the Celtics, who have the best record in the NBA over the last 3 months, and may even have to do it on their floor because the Mavericks are only a four seed. It would be an impressive run for a Luka Doncic who's only 23 years old without that second All-Star, doing it on his own, with an unproven head coach in Jason Kidd, right, who's also doing this all for the first time in terms of how far he's gotten into the postseason. It'd be a remarkable run for Luka, and it would clearly cement him as the best player in the league right now. I know we're very fickle with this. Giannis won a championship last year, and so for the last 12 months, we've called Giannis the best player in the world. And so quickly, we would change our opinions if Luka gets it done, but I think rightfully so. And not only would the conversation be about the here and now, Luka being the best player in the league, but I really think the conversation would also be about what he'd be able to accomplish over the course of his career. If he wins a championship and finishes off this run, which seems unlikely, they are the largest long shot in Vegas of the final four teams remaining. But if he finishes this off, it'd be an impressive run for a 23-year-old without much help around him as a number four seed. Going all the way, beating the Suns, would have to beat the Warriors, potentially the Celtics or the Heat in the finals. It'd be quite the run. And not only would it make Luka the best player in the league, but we'd be having those conversations like, okay, what is the ceiling on this guy? What can he account? If he just did this with this roster this year, and he's only 23, how many can he get? Where will he be by the time he retires? If Luka gets a championship this year, it would not only make him the best player in the league right now, but it would also start the conversations of, is this an all-time great? And I think he is. It may be too soon to say such a thing, but I think he's on that path already, regardless of what happens this postseason. For the Miami Heat, they have the third best odds to win a championship now at this point. First, on that subject, number one seeds that are underdogs in any round of the playoffs, the last one to make the championship was the Jazz in Michael Jordan's final season with the Bulls, 1998. That Jazz team, they were the one seed. They were an underdog in the conference finals in the West. That's the last time a one seed has, as an underdog, made it to the finals in the NBA playoffs. Now, you may think, well, how often is a one seed an underdog? Yeah, not too often, but in the last 35 years, the Jazz are the only team to do it. Number one seeds that are underdogs are 1-11 in series. The Heat are underdogs in this series as a one seed to the Celtics. Last 35 years, those teams have gone 1-11 in those series. The Heat are the third largest long shot of the final four teams, despite being the one seed in the East. With that said, if they get this done and win a championship, who would it be most beneficial towards? Of course, Jimmy Butler gets that first championship and finally does it at the age of 32 as the star of this team. I think it's, though, more impactful for the coach. I think it's more impactful for even just the organization. We talked about this last week, but if Miami were to win a championship 15 years ago with Dwayne Wade and Shaq, come back a few years after that, win a couple of championships about a decade ago with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, and then come back again and win a championship this year after getting to the championship 2 years ago, now with this new version led by Jimmy Butler, that'd be quite the feather in the cap of Pat Riley and the Miami Heat. And more specifically, also Eric Spoelstra, who was the head coach with LeBron and now would have his first championship without LeBron. And he'd be close to catching up to Greg Popovich for number of championships this century. Spoelstra would cement himself as one of the better coaches, one of the best coaches in the NBA now and in quite a long time. Back when he was winning those championships, it would be simple to write it off to, well, he has LeBron James. Right, they had the big three, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James. But if he goes and wins it now, after getting so close 2 years ago, led by Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero and Bam, right, that'd be pretty impressive for Eric Spoelstra, who would cement himself as one of the all-time coaches. The Celtics are the favorites in the East. If they were to win a championship, it'd be huge for all involved. And same like the Heat, it'd be big for the organization. Consider that the Celtics have just that one championship in the last 30 years, and yet they're still one of the biggest brands of the league. They're kind of like the Cowboys. The Cowboys won all sorts of Super Bowls way back when, but what have you done for me lately? Not much, and yet they're still one of the biggest, probably the biggest brands in the NFL. For the Celtics, they won all sorts of championships over the years. Well, what have you done for me lately, right? One championship lasts 30 years, and yet them and the Lakers are still the biggest brands in the NBA. So if the Celtics win, it would just be huge for them as an organization. But most importantly, it'd be big for Jason Tatum to get that championship before he even turned 25. As I've been repeating on the show often in recent weeks, you usually have to wait a little while. Jordan didn't win his first championship until he was 28. Same with LeBron. Even if you look at Shaq, he was 28 when he got his first championship. Usually we don't see guys under 25 lead their way there. And for the Celtics to go through Durant and Kyrie in the first round, and then to go through the defending champs and Giannis in the second round, and then to beat the number one seed, the Heat, in the next round, and then potentially knock off Steph Curry and the Warriors in the finals, will be quite the run for the Celtics, led by a 24-year-old superstar. Who would probably become a superstar at that point. And then lastly, the Warriors are the favorites. And you may think, there's not a whole lot on the line for the Warriors. What more can they accomplish? And that's fair. They probably have the least to try to change, accomplish, prove, certainly, of these final four teams. But for Steph Curry, it would be a big ring because you may have those that write off the past success, kind of like Spoelstra. Right? Well, he had LeBron James. Same idea with Curry. Like, well, he won two of those with Durant. It'd be a lot different now if you get it done. First time since Durant left, a couple years removed. Klay Thompson hasn't played in 2 years. Draymond Green is a lot older and slower and half the player he was. Even Steph Curry has lost like a quarter of a step at this point. And to go out there and still win another championship would be pretty impressive for Curry and the Warriors. And would probably cement Steph Curry. I don't know. Would it make him in the top five? Certainly he's top 10 players of all time. He's the greatest shooter we've ever had. And now he would have another championship ring, his fourth, and would lead the least talented team he's had to a championship over those championship rings, which would be impressive. The Warriors certainly have the least amount to try to prove or change when it comes to their legacy, but it would still make it pretty impressive for Steph Curry and company if they get it done this year. But this is what we play sports for, right? This is the whole point. This is why you play the games. This is why you watch the games. This is why we talk about the games. It just comes down to the championships. And when these guys retire, unfortunately, a lot of times we kind of just minimize them to what they did a couple of weeks out of the year. Doesn't matter about the regular season and all the wins they compiled. How did you do in the playoffs? James Harden, yeah, great player, but not quite as good in the postseason. Chris Paul, he's called the point god, but usually chokes in the postseason. Barkley was a great player, but you kind of forget about him because he never won a championship. Malone, Stockton. Malone scored almost the most amount of points in NBA history, but he never won a championship. Getting that first one is huge, and there's a couple of guys who will have a chance to try to get their first one, and in the case of Luka and Jason Tatum and some of these other young players, they could get that first one a lot sooner than most stars do. A chance for a couple of guys to really impact that legacy in a big way these next couple of weeks. Coming up later on, we'll talk about who has the best chance to win the championship. You can make the case for each of these four teams to actually go win it all, which could make it for a fascinating Final Four. When we come back, the best player left standing in this postseason. We'll rank the best players remaining in the NBA playoffs when we return. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's your thing. Do what you wanna do. I can't tell you who to sock it to. It's your thing. Do what you wanna do. I can't tell you who to sock it to. If you want me to love you, maybe I'll wait. Believe me, woman, it ain't no big deal. Oh, you need love now, just as bad as I do.
Who are the best players remaining in the NBA postseason? We'll rank them for you. Coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Try to catch up with Cedric Maxwell in about 10 minutes. Won a couple of NBA championships, was the MVP of the 1981 Finals. Talk about these playoffs with him. Plus, later on, we have to get to some comments from Nick Saban, some comments from Sean Payton. We got a lot to do throughout the afternoon. But we're getting ready for the NBA playoffs, which resume tonight. No NHL postseason last night. No NBA playoffs last night. Bit of a weird night. All you had was early season baseball, and I'm into it. I was watching the games, but it just didn't feel the same. Tonight, we get game one of the Celtics and the Heat. You get the NBA draft lottery as well. And we dive back into these important games. As we get ready for these final four teams to battle, let's rank the best players available. We know there's one star on each of these four teams. How would you rank them, and who would that fifth best player be? The five best players ranked in order remaining in the NBA playoffs. It's today's Tasty Top 5.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the Tasty Top 5.
I'm tasty.
Number 5.
Number five is the toughest one, at least in terms of who you're going to include. You know the top four players. The tough question about those four is how you would organize them. Number five is just simply, who would you include as fifth on your list? And I thought about Klay Thompson. Hasn't been great, but you know, made some big shots last year. Recent always has that capability, assuming he's healthy, right? He could always find his stroke. He's been there. He's played in big games. For the same reasons, I consider Draymond Green very good defensively, has played in a lot of big games. He's scrappy, may not put up big numbers, but has a big impact. But it really comes down to Jaylen Brown or Bam Adebayo. And this was a tough decision. I'm going to go with Bam at number five. Now, they're pretty similar in that, you know, they both can score the basket. Brown has put up more points than Bam. Bam is a better defensive player. He was the runner-up, oddly enough, to you know another Celtic for a defensive player. I would go with Bam at five, averaging a double-double this year, scoring 20. Now, look, granted, the Heat, and we'll get into this too with Jimmy Butler, but they've had easier competition this postseason than the Celtics. You get to go through an 8 seed and then the banged-up Sixers when Embiid's not playing for two of the games, compared to the Celtics going through the Nets with Kyrie and Durant and then Giannis and the Bucks. But nonetheless, I go Bam at number five. And the Heat are the only team that I would put two players in the top five. It's very close. Jaylen Brown's 5B. He'd be number six in the list. Klay and Draymond probably after that, but I go Bam at five. Then we get into the four stars of the four teams. How would you organize them? I put Jason Tatum at number four. I put him in last of the star players. Now I think Tatum's a very good player. And he was fantastic in Game 6, season on the line, in Milwaukee. He goes off for 46 points in that Celtics double-digit victory to keep the series, the season alive, allow them to come back and win Game 7. It was a fantastic performance. I don't want to take anything away from it. But that was also the only game in the seven games that Tatum was the leading scorer. And in two of their wins, he wasn't the leading scorer on his team. You had Al Horford outscore him. And then in Game 7, you had Grant Williams was the leading scorer, outscored Tatum. And maybe because Tatum didn't have to do as much, and he would be capable of carrying the team as well. But I put him at number four. Certainly a very good player. He's a star. I pondered coming into this postseason, is he a superstar? That's the real question. And I still don't have that answer just yet. It's been impressive that the Celtics have gotten to this point, and Tatum's had some big games, but I still think a little too inconsistent. He disappeared in a couple of those games, especially in Milwaukee early in the series, that allowed Boston to fall behind. So I put him at number four. Number three, I go at Steph Curry. I put him ahead of Tatum just because of the experience and the ability that Curry is still, right, he's still the best shooter in the league. And when he gets hot, lights out. He didn't have a great series against Memphis, but you know what he's capable of doing, especially this time of year. Right, he's played in a countless number of these big games. And so I still trust him in the big spots compared to Tatum, who's played in a lot of playoff games already, but hasn't won a championship yet, hasn't played in a championship, and is 23. And Curry, just in general, right, has had obviously the better career. He's the better player than Tatum. Now, why I only put Steph Curry at three, with all that said, and put Jimmy Butler at two, is because Butler's to me has been more impressive this postseason. And maybe I owe Jimmy Butler an apology, because I put him in the same camp as Tatum, right, where they're good players, stars even, but I didn't think they were good enough to perform at this highest level enough to carry that team. And Jimmy Butler's been very good. Now, the disclaimer, of course, is that, again, they've gone through easier competition than, say, the Celtics or most of these other teams, being a one seed. But nonetheless, Jimmy Butler's averaging almost 30 points per game. He has Jason Tatum beat in every offensive category except assists. And he's a talented two-way player. He's very good on defense. He's clearly the star of the Heat. He's led them to this point. He's been playing the best of anybody this postseason outside of course, the number one player on this list, Luka Doncic, who we talked about yesterday. And I think it's clear. I've seen some people debate it. I don't think there is a debate. Right now, the best player left in the postseason, based off of how they've been playing and who I would want for a postseason game tonight, if I had to pick one player to go win a game tonight right now, I'm taking Luka Doncic. I don't think it's much of a debate. He's been fantastic. He was great against the Suns. We ran through all the numbers yesterday. Already, in a small sample size, but early on in his career, he already has the second most points per game for any playoff performer ever, only behind Michael Jordan. He's number one in elimination games. He had as many points as the number one seeded Suns in the first half of that game the other night in Phoenix in the most important game of the year. He had better stats on the road than at home against the Suns. He played even better in hostile environments. Luka's clearly number one. He can make every pass. He could pretty much make every shot. He's a dynamic scorer. He could do a little bit of everything. And he's not a great defensive player, except when he wants to be. Right? Overall, you're not going to know Luka for his defense. But when he has to make a play, he can on the defensive end of the floor. And the Mavericks, by the way, because of Luka, people probably don't think of them as a very good defensive team. They were top seven this year. So they're a good defensive team, even if their leader may not be their best defensive player. He can worry about the offense. They can worry about the defense. Luka's number one. And it's why I give the Mavs a chance. They have the worst odds to win the championship of any team remaining. They're the four seed going up against the great Golden State Warriors. But you have to give the Mavericks a chance because they have the best player remaining in Luka Doncic. That's how I would order the four stars. Tatum, I put fourth. Curry, I put third ahead of Tatum because of that experience and the potential. Jimmy Butler, I put second just simply because while he doesn't have that experience or even maybe the high ceiling scoring-wise of a Steph Curry, when Curry has a, you know, a hot night, still Butler has just played as the second-best player this postseason. And Luka has been the best player this postseason, so of course he tops the list. When we come back, we'll catch up with Cedric Maxwell. He won a couple of NBA championships with the Celtics and also was the MVP of that 81 Finals. And we'll talk about the postseason, what it takes to win this time of year, and if Luka is the closest thing we've had since Larry Bird. Cedric Maxwell, scheduled to join us when we return. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As we get ready for the NBA postseason to resume tonight with the final four teams remaining. And joining us now is somebody who knows a thing or two about winning big games and championships. It's Cedric Maxwell, who spent over a decade in the NBA, won a couple of championships with the Celtics, and was the finals MVP back in 1981, had his number retired by the Celtics. Now he's part of the broadcasting crew for their radio calls, and he's with us now. Cedric, good afternoon. How are you?
Man, that's a lot of information you gave out there, and I like it, though. You know, since we're down here in Miami, and, you know, my son lives down in the Charleston area. He works for Toyota down there, so I know he's probably going to be tuned in to hear some of the information down south.
Yeah, perfect. Appreciate. Yeah, I know you're from North Carolina originally, so not too far from here. So, hey, I could have gone a lot longer with that intro. You've accomplished a lot throughout your career. Let's talk about these Celtics, and also I want to get your thoughts on what it takes to win this time of year after you did so many times. But first, with these Boston Celtics, as you said, you're in Miami. You get ready for this game tonight with the Heat. What has made this Celtics team so difficult? They have the best record in the league the last couple of months. Here they are in the conference finals, just beat the defending champs. When you watch this team every night, what is it that makes them so tough?
They are defensively. They you know, they're out there and they're warriors right now, man. They're playing the game at a high level, man. What they do is defensively, they're able to get in your ass. They make it tough for you. I'm sitting right now talking. I'm out here, and this is a hard job. I'll say sometimes, don't tell nobody, but I'm out here at poolside right now with Grant Williams' dad. We're sitting down strategizing about his next contract. So you know, it's a fun time right now to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I could imagine. You know, speaking of Grant Williams, you talk about that contract. After the way he played the other night, he's due for a raise. How important is it? You played on championship teams. How important is it to have guys like even an Al Horford, a Grant Williams step up, where it's not Jason Tatum leading the show every game when you have those role players lead the team in scoring? I mean, how important is that for a championship team?
Well, it's just funny. You talk about role players, and I was, you know, I wasn't a role player, but I was a star player, but then I played among stars. When you play, when you have a Larry Bird and a Kevin McHale and a Robert Parrish and Dennis Johnson and Nate Archibald, all Hall of Famers. But you understand that, you know, there are going to be opportunities for everybody. And your opportunity is going to be, could be very small. So you have to cash in. To be the finals MVP, you know, during the time with Moses Malone.
Oh, no. We lost Cedric. We'll reconnect with Cedric Maxwell. Chilling by the pool down in Miami, getting ready for the playoffs tonight. Like you said, hey, it's a harder job than you believe. We'll have to reconnect. Maybe the pina colada was delivered. We'll reconnect with Cedric Maxwell. Bad cell connection there. He was the finals MVP in 81, won a couple of championships with those great Celtics teams that you think of the 80s with Bird and McHale. And McHale was his backup, right, originally. McHale was coming off the bench. Cedric Maxwell was in the starting lineup. He got there just before Bird in Boston, won all sorts of championships, and now works for the radio broadcast team as they get ready for game one in Miami tonight with the Heat, which should be a fascinating series. So we'll try to reconnect with Cedric to talk about not only that series, but the NBA playoffs as a whole, as someone who won a lot of big games. And also Luka Doncic, with how impressive he is on the other side. And maybe, you know, Cedric mentioned Larry Bird. He may be the closest thing we've had since Larry Legend. Looks like we have Cedric back after we lost the call. Sorry about that, Cedric. As you were saying, you know, when you won that Finals MVP in 1981, talking about guys stepping up in big moments.
Well, that you know, talking about big moments, you don't get a lot of them. And when you look at a guy like Grant Williams, able to step up in a big moment like that, and we have a Tatum, you have a Brown, those opportunities are very, very small. So you just have to get out and play and, you know, let those chips fall where they may. So I love the Celtics opportunity. Playing against Miami tonight, I'm going to beat you to it. And there are going to be things that Celtics are going to have to do. It's going to have to be playing on the defensive end because both teams right now are great defensive teams.
Oh, boy. That's not good. Must be on our end. I don't know what the issue is, dropping these calls. Have phone problems. Maybe the third. Maybe we'll give it one last try, hopefully. Then we'll stop interrupting Cedric. He's trying to get ready courtside, or I should say poolside, before he gets courtside for the game tonight. Makes for great radio, right? Middle of a good response, and then and not only the phone drops, but you get that annoying dial tone, too. You hear the click, and you hear the dial. There's nothing worse than that. That's the most annoying thing. We'll see if we can reconnect with Cedric Maxwell. Having some issues. This is like when we had Scott Pollard. Same thing was happening with Scott Pollard a few weeks ago. Damn technology. Now, he played with Larry Bird back in the 80s. And if we're able to reconnect, I would love to get his opinion on the Larry-Luka comp. Because Luka, as we've been talking the last couple days, right, is the best player going in the NBA playoffs, left remaining. But he's reminiscent of a Larry to me in that, right, he seems to be a step slow. He's not the most fleet of foot. He's not the most athletic player out there, at least not perceived to be. But he can make any pass, and he can score from anywhere on the floor, and he's incredibly talented. And one of those guys that maybe even overlook. Right? Like, even to this day, we were talking in the first segment about guys who are overlooked because of the lack of postseason success. Like a Malone, a Stockton, I'll use the same names, Charles Barkley. Larry Bird, you can't talk about the lack of postseason success. That's not why he'd be overlooked. It just was that he never really looked like a player. And remember when Isaiah Thomas made those comments? If Larry was African-American, he'd just be another player. Right, which isn't entirely true. You go back and you look at Larry's resume in the 80s, it's remarkable what he accomplished. And I don't think Larry Bird gets enough respect today compared to what he was doing back then. And because of the back issue, he had to retire early on. So he was somebody that was kind of overlooked. Luka, same idea. He walks onto a floor, you think, like, yeah, he's a little overweight. He's not the fastest guy. He's not a great two-way player. But, man, when the ball's in his hands, he could do anything on the floor. And like Larry, and look, Larry played with a great supporting cast, of course, but he was the leader. He led those teams to the championship. He was the big star. And other similarities, Larry Bird was a great trash talker. The famous story of showing up to three-point shooting contests and saying to the competitors, who's coming in second tonight? The story of playing only with his left hand against, what was it, Portland? Because he said afterwards, I wanted to save my right hand for the Lakers. I mean, what a great line that is. Larry telling other stories. There's countless stories. Same idea with Luka Doncic. Did you see him this past series against the Suns? And when you talk trash to somebody like that, there are certain players you probably shouldn't talk trash to. Jordan was certainly one of them. Jordan would make up stories because people stopped talking trash to him. He would make up stories as if somebody was talking trash just so he had a reason to hate you out on the floor. Kobe Bryant was a lot like Jordan, and you probably don't want to talk trash to him either. Larry Bird, don't talk trash to Bird. It's only going to make things worse. And Luka, same idea. And I love the line when Luka came off the floor after Game 5 after they lost and was asked about, you know, the Suns mocking him and everything. And he said, it's easy to talk when you're ahead. And boy, was he right. Right? Are the Suns still chirping now? I can't hear them. Because they were mocking Luka all series despite him scoring 35 points a night, even if they weren't winning all those games. And Luka lit him up the last two games. And the memes that have come out since of him smiling at Devin Booker in games, oh, it's fantastic. I always love that. As I've said, look, I had never played at a high level when it came to basketball, but I've never been a trash talker. I never engage in trash talk. So I always love a player like Luka, right? You talk trash to him, and then he gets the last laugh. I always love that. The Suns were very arrogant throughout that series, and then Luka lit them up and embarrassed them Game 7. I love that revenge story. I think there's a lot of similarities between him and Bird. They can make every pass. They could score from anywhere on the floor. Bird was such an incredible shooter. Underrated to this day just because the three-point line wasn't as prominent back then. They were a little, you know, they seemed to step slow, and yet they always got past you. They always created their own shot. Weren't great on defense, but were good enough that they could hold their own, and they made big plays. How many big steals did Larry Bird have? There was that one, Isaiah Thomas, right? Bird missed the big shot. Thomas tried to inbound it quickly, and Bird picked it off. Luka, same idea. Doesn't play great defense, but at the end of the game, he'll lock in a little bit. Bird had great instincts defensively. Anyways, I could go on and on about the comparisons. But I do think Luka Doncic is probably the closest thing we've had to a Larry Bird. And he's so fun to watch. And I'll tell you what, Larry was a lot of fun to watch, too. Growing up, my brothers and I, we used to love watching those the 80s finals between the Lakers and the Celtics, or just the highlight tapes and the things that Bird would do out there. Crazy stuff. Well, we appreciate some of the time from Cedric Maxwell. Unfortunately, some phone issues, maybe on our end, and we couldn't complete the interview. I had so many things I was intrigued to ask, not only about Larry Bird and Luka Doncic, but also about Winning Time, right? The HBO series that was about the Celtics, and while he's not in the show, Cedric Maxwell, I don't believe, is directly in the show, his character, his name. Nonetheless, you still have the story of the Lakers and the Celtics battling from that time, and Larry Bird's in the show, and I would have loved his thoughts on that HBO show. So many things I would love to get to Cedric on. And apparently, he's got a kid in the area. Now, awkwardly, I tell you what, these iPhones, they're great. Sometimes they can get you in trouble. Awkwardly, I FaceTimed Cedric by accident this morning. Maybe that's the reason why. He's hanging up on us. No, I'm kidding. He's not hanging up. We're having phone issues.
That happens way too often. Oh. And Apple needs to, before, you know, because you hit the FaceTime and it immediately just FaceTimes.
Yes.
It needs to say, are you sure you want to FaceTime this person? Happens all the time, Luke. Just so happened for you, you FaceTimed an NBA great this morning.
Yeah, and we're not on, like, great, you know, we text, but we're not hanging out. I don't know him well enough to ever FaceTime him. I can only imagine what he thought when he got a missed FaceTime call from me. It's the worst. These buttons. Look, I never liked touch screens. I got clunky fingers, big fingers. I typed the wrong things. I remember when we were talking about the iPod last week because the iPod's going away. I remember I was a big iPod guy, and I loved the wheel. Then they came out with the iPod Touch, and a couple of my buddies got that, and they loved it. I thought it was terrible. That was the first time I ever used a touch screen. It was before I had an iPhone. This is going way back. This was before everybody had iPhones. I had a BlackBerry. Had the keyboard on the phone. Loved that thing. That was my first smartphone. And I hated the iPod Touch because with my finger, you're touching the wrong artist and you got to go back. I actually wanted this song. It was such a pain. Same idea with this iPhone. Now I've come around. I got no problem with the touchscreen anymore. You're so used to it nowadays. But how often do you press the wrong button on your iPhone? And when you go to the contact, that's the issue. When you go to the contact, you have all those buttons there like text, call, FaceTime's right there. And I hit the wrong, I didn't even mean to. My finger's too big. I hit FaceTime and like Trent said, it immediately starts dialing that person. And even if you hang up before, like you ever call somebody by accident, you could hang up the phone on your iPhone before the seconds even start counting on your phone. They still get a missed call. So same idea with the FaceTime. I hung up like as quickly as I could. I'm sure he still got a notification about a missed FaceTime call from me. So awkward. I was gonna bring it up at the end of the interview just to see if he noticed. That's the worst.
He seems like a guy, though, that probably would have answered. Like, very
That's
nice
true.
Guy. He'd just answer, be like, hello?
Yeah.
You know, like, you doing all right?
Yeah.
Luke?
Sitting poolside in Miami with Grant Williams' father. Not bad.
What a life.
Yeah. Seriously. I know. That's pretty good. Gets to broadcast the game. He gets to sit poolside during the day, courtside at night. And people actually pay us to do this. It's remarkable. Now, look, I'm not calling NBA playoff games, but same. You always get the best view at the stadium. People are paying to go watch the game. You get paid to watch the game. It's the best. So anyways, appreciate the effort from Cedric Maxwell. We'll try to get him on at some other point during the postseason because the Celtics aren't going anywhere anytime soon, at least. Right? This series will go on for at least 2 weeks. So appreciate the time from him. Hey, when we come back, let's do we'll get to Sean Payton, I guess, when we come back. Look, Sean Payton, we get this story about Sean Payton potentially being the next coach of the Panthers a year from now, the Panthers being interested. And we talked about this on the show yesterday. And I said, look, if I'm the Panthers, I would love to have Sean Payton as my next head coach. If I was most teams in the league, I'd love to have Sean Payton. Well, fast forward 24 hours, I think I'm already out on Sean Payton for any team. I'll explain why. Plus, also, Nick Saban had some comments about college football. And I don't know if it's so much a complaint as it is a warning, once again. We know how Saban is. Maybe he's warning everybody. We'll get to that coming up as well. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, I think I'm already out on Sean Payton as potentially the next coach of the Panthers. Or really anybody for that matter, and I'll explain why. It's the More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment, somewhat from Cedric Maxwell. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Unfortunately, some technical issues kept from completing that conversation with Cedric, but we'll try to catch up with him at some other point throughout this postseason as we get ready for the Celtics and the Heat game one tonight. Now, yesterday in the show, we had Mike McCarthy on from Front Office Sports, who had the story of the Panthers' interest in Sean Payton a year from now, if and when he wants to return to coaching. And I would be all for it. All due respect to Matt Rhule, right? It's kind of breaking my own. I don't like the idea of talking about, in this case, Sean's not putting it out there. Instead, we're just discussing it. I never like when someone goes after a job that's currently being held on to. Now, Sean's not doing that. That's just the report. The Panthers are already thinking ahead. But if you're looking for a change, or if the Panthers only win 5 games this year, it's time for a change. Of course, you'd love to welcome on Sean Payton. So I'm all for it. If I'm a Panthers fan, I'd be into it. Or so I thought, until I heard this piece of audio yesterday. Sean Payton was busy over the weekend. As this report came out, he was the commencement speaker for a college graduation at Loyola. What is it, Loyola University? Loyola College, whatever one. It's not the one in Chicago. And here is Sean Payton, who has won a Super Bowl before, who has had to give a lot of pregame speeches or halftime speeches or even sideline speeches to fire up his team. And at the end of his speech, his parting words for the graduates as they go on to take on the world, this was the best Sean Payton could come up with. Here was his grand finale at his graduation speech at Loyola over the weekend.
Tub Thumping is the name of a song in the 90s. I'm dating myself from a band, Chumbawamba. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never going to keep me down. Now, I did some research on that. Evidently, it's fairly political, but that would be the song I would sing because it constantly goes back to the same lyrics. I get knocked down, I get up again. You're never going to keep me down. And that would be my wish for this class. Congratulations.
Oh, we have a Super Bowl winning coach who has given speeches before going to win a Super Bowl. They came out of that locker room in halftime of the Super Bowl with a surprise onside kick. I'm sure he's getting his guys fired up in that locker room. And over the weekend, talking to college graduates, we go with Chumbawamba, Tub Thumping, one of the most annoying songs ever created. Get that out. That's brutal. I don't want that guy in my locker room trying to fire up my guys. That's not inspiring at all. And by the way, when he went through it there, it looked like, he wasn't even interested. He knew it was a cop-out, low-hanging fruit. He didn't sound very inspiring as he was reading that off. Chumbawamba, Tub Thumping. You might as well, the kid, valedictorian or whatever, at my speech, did the old cliche, the future's so bright, we got to wear shades. Like he's Timbuk3, not Timbuk2. Don't forget the great one-hit wonder, Timbuk3 back in the day. The future's so bright, I got to wear. And he pulled out sunglasses and put them on. That is the most cliche thing you could ever do at a graduation. I don't know how many people have done that over the years. And unfortunately, at my graduation, that was done. That was the ending. He said something along the lines of, I think the future's so bright for us, we all need to wear shades and put on sunglasses. And I thought, my goodness, can I hand my diploma back? This is embarrassing. And then, I thought that was bad. Then I hear Sean Payton go up there, and he quotes Chumbawamba. Which, by the way, as he said, kind of dating himself, makes me feel old. Because I remember when that song was a big hit. But that's the other thing. We're talking about college graduates who are 20. Do they even know Chumbawamba, Tub Thumping? Trent, I put you to the test. Do you know that song, Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba?
Not a chance, and I believe no? I'm a similar age to this graduating class here of Loyola. Congratulations, by the way. And no, I would have been very upset that that was my send-off to my new life getting out of college.
Seriously, you hear, we get Sean Payton. I want to hear stories. Right, you got Bill Parcells up there. Back in the day, Vince Lombardi would tell great stories. Jim Valvano told great stories. Jim Valvano gave the greatest speech a coach has ever given, right, at the ESPYs way back when. And I get Sean Payton giving me Chumbawamba by Tub Thumping? I'm out. Not interested. If I'm David Tepper and I see that video, I say, no thanks. I don't want this guy in my locker room. I can look past the bounty gate that kept my Vikings from winning a Super Bowl. I can even look past he had some personal issues with some pain pills from the medical staff, and he had a, like, whatever. Everybody deals with some issues. I can look past, I can get past that. It's okay. He's doing better now. I can't get past the Chumbawamba quote to end the commencement speech. deal breaker. Ultimate red flag. Now, Rolling Stone magazine put together the list of the most annoying songs of the 90s. Because let me tell you, somebody who grew up on that music, there was a lot of them. Tub Thumping comes in at number 5. I'm surprised it's not even higher. You also have Ice Ice Baby as number 4 from Vanilla Ice. Achy Breaky Heart by Billy Ray Cyrus at number 3. The Macarena at number 2. And number 1 is Barbie Girl by Aqua. All brutal songs. Just to finish out this top 10 list, by the way. 6 is Hanson Mbop. 7 is My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. I got a soft spot for that song. Number 8, Who Let the Dogs Out by Baha Men. Why didn't Sean Payton go with that one? Number 9 is Right Said Fred, I'm Too Sexy. And number 10, this is the one I have a real problem with because I love this song, What's Up by Four Non Blondes. That's a great song. Otherwise, the other 9, you could probably do without. The 90s gave us so many annoying songs. And one of the most annoying, other than Who Let the Dogs Out, is Chumbawamba Tub Thumping. And that's what a Super Bowl winning head coach went to in his bag of tricks at a commencement speech over the weekend. Give me Matt Rhule and 5 wins next year over that. I'm out on Sean Payton. Hour 2 next. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.